This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Hermione Ireland. How are you, Hermione?
I'm very well. Thanks, Chris. Lovely to be here today.
Excellent. You're with the Academy Divin Library.
I am.
And they are a book publisher.
That's right, yes.
So what we're going to talk about today is I want to talk a little bit about the Academy Divin, but I also want to put it into context with the larger book publishing, particularly wine book publishing organisations. The Academy Divin Library is a little bit different in that it's actually started by wine people. It's a wine specialist book publisher. So do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the Academy Divin?
Thanks, I'd love to. So I'm a publishing professional. I've always worked in the consumer publishing industry, and I was approached about this job, and I thought the idea of publishing just wine books sounded almost too good to be true. So I've actually, you know, been learning a lot about wine as I've been working with the Academy. I did my level three. I was telling you, podcasts were absolutely invaluable to me. So Stephen Spurrier and Hugh Johnson, you know, two of our greats. Stephen was a legend in the wine industry for many of the things he did, and Hugh is our most loved wine writer. They were sitting down.
The big thing was Judgment of Paris.
Judgment of Paris, 1976. Not an intentional thing. He didn't mean to create the Ferrari that he did, but this was when he did a blind tasting in Paris, French judges blind tasting some of the top California wines and the top French wines, and of course the Californians won. And I mean, you know, he's a saint in the US. He was an amazing, amazing man. So Stephen and Hugh were talking about wine writing from the past and how it was a shame that a lot of these books weren't in print anymore. So we were founded in 2019, and our first book was Michael Broadbent's Wine Tasting, Michael was really the founder of wine tasting as a proper discipline. And we felt this book needed to be back in print. But we're about to publish our 21st title next month. It's called On Burgundy. And the majority of our books have been on newly commissioned titles. So we did republish Hugh's Story of Wine, which we think is, again, a very, very important book to have in the wine literature canon. And we republished Stephen's memoirs, which had been published just a year or so before, but they needed to be improved. But we've been publishing new books, Andrew Jefford's Drinking with the Valkyries, these anthologies about different regions. On Burgundy is our fourth one. We've done Bordeaux, Champagne and California as well, and they're full of words of lots of different writers. So we're about telling stories for wine lovers to enrich their drinking experience, but it's really focusing on the stories of the wines, the regions, the people who make them. That's what we're about. So we do differ from some other publishing companies.
Yeah. You guys are quite new,
yeah,
and haven't got a huge back catalogue. 21 books, though, is not bad. And a lot of them in e-books, some of them are on
audio. Yeah, audio. Story of Wine and Stephen's memoirs, and Andrew Jeffers' book will be coming soon, very soon, as an audio.
Lovely. Yeah, for someone who doesn't read, I mean, I read textbooks and I read the news and I read lots of stuff, but I'm not I listen to lots of audio books, but I don't read. So for me, audio is the way to go, I think. So how do you guys fit within the bigger, you know, can you give us a sort of 10,000 feet view of what makes up the wine publishing industry?
Certainly. So in the UK, you've got the big guys are basically Mitchell Beazley, who is part of Hachette, which is one of the really big companies. And they publish Hugh and Chances's World Atlas of Wine, which is the number one best-selling wine book by value in the world. And his Pocket Guide, now produced by Margaret Rand, which is the best-selling by volume, I think globally, certainly in the UK. So they've got a great big reference book, and they've got a small annual reference book. They actually publish a lot fewer wine titles than they used to. Penguin publishes Jantzis's Big Grapes book, and they have a couple of others on their list. And then Oxford, the Oxford University Press publishes Jantzis's Oxford Companion, which is, you know, the ultimate reference book, basically, for wine. And her next edition is coming out in about 3 weeks' time. So just want to mention that. They're fantastic books, all of these. They're very, very expensive books to put together. They take many years and big teams to do it. And obviously a tiny company like us, there's only six of us, that's not what we can do, which is why we don't do reference. I think our closest sort of publishing competitor, but I see them as frenemies. You know, they're great team. Is the Infinite Ideas Classic Wine Library. So they have that large series of books that are all region specific, published, written by great experts in their field. They're all the same format. They're more referenced than we are. We're more about wine literature. So I think this space, and we've sometimes helped promote their books and vice versa. I basically think the more people in the wine book industry help each other, the better, because it's a small group of people basically who love wine and who read books, and we should be telling them about all of our books. In the US, you've got two or three other publishers, Ten Speed Press, who are, I think, a Californian outfit. Ten Speed. They also do bikes, I think.
I was going to say. Yeah.
I think so. So they do several different hobby things, but they publish some beautiful books. So John Bonnet's New France, which he published, I think, at the beginning of the year. It's £130 on Amazon. It's a two-volume slipcase. You know, serious, serious wine publishing. There are some other people. They're the guys I kind of know best. There are some French guys. If you go into a bookshop, the wine has one bookshop, even in one bookshelf, even in a really big bookshop in the centre of London, for instance. Food takes tables and tables, lots and lots of bookshelves. So I think it's really important for us to be working with the wine industry, particularly with wine schools, with wine merchants, and building up direct to consumer, because that's how we get the word out about our books. The book industry itself is, yeah, I think wine is underrepresented, if I'm honest, as a, you know, something it's really interesting reading and publishing books about wine, but it's the market isn't as wide as I think it could be.
Where does, like every year, various people publish, you know, their top 100 wines, or their, you know, you get reference books for the best wines for the year, and so you can go off and buy all the different wines that some person recommends. Where does that fit into this? Because you didn't mention that to style a book.
There's a lot less of that than there used to be. There used to be quite a few annual pocket wine guides. As far as I know, the Hugh Johnson Margaret Round one is the main one on the market. Most other people are doing them online now. So there's, you know, there's a South American organization who do one. People do them as ebooks, but a lot of those things aren't in print anymore. Robert Joseph I worked at Dorling Kindersley many years ago, and we did one with Robert Joseph. There's not as much of it. The magazines do a lot of it, and a lot of it's online. I think when it comes to that sort of topical, timely reference, that's where people expect to be online. It's my perspective on it.
Okay, and that's interesting, because it looks like there's been a shift. How is the physical book holding up as a product? As ebooks and audible books come into the market, is the sales staying same, but it's being split over multiple categories, or is it, you know, what's going on?
So in the publishing industry generally, ebook had their day about 10 years ago when they'd taken quite a chunk out of print, and ever since then it's plateaued and it's possibly come down a bit. Physical printed books have had a really good resurgence in the last 5 years. COVID, when people were at home, they seem to want to be buying physical books. I think our books are quite high end. They're mostly about £30. We make sure they look and feel really beautiful. So, you know, if you're serious about wine, you know, why not have a book that's beautiful as well? So there's a physicality to them that I think is important. But I do think accessibility is really important, to your point about audio and preferring to listen. The problem with audiobooks is they're quite expensive to put out. Otherwise, I would have done audio editions for all of my books. I would love to do more audio editions. Ebooks are very cheap, and I haven't got all of the list on ebook yet, but I will in the next 6 months, because there are many people who use ebooks because they want to do large type, or, you know, it's a lower price, or it's more environmentally friendly. And I think publishers should be offering books in both the formats. I think audio is a bit harder, but...
And also, you can get ebook readers now, so a voice just reads the text. And with AI, I looked at that type of thing years ago, and I thought, this is, they don't sound very good. You know, it's a little bit stilted.
But now...
I know, but I've seen some AI...
The voices are fantastic.
Yeah, the voices are really
good. I'm going to use some of them to produce some of the audiobooks for me. I think that they're really, really fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. I've been looking at some voices and some technology to do that recently, and it does sound like someone's proper,
yeah,
proper reading.
And for our books, because I, as I said, our books are really stories, they really should be available as audio as well as e. You're not going to look at the World Atlas or, you know, the Oxford Companion. You're not going to do that as an e-book. Or you're certainly not going to do it as audio because you're referencing, you're flicking back and forward in the pages. The other thing, other format you might want is a website, but they're expensive to build, and it doesn't make sense commercially unless you're offering a subscription. People have to pay to get that to access that data. And there was a period like 10 years ago in publishing when that was a thing. And I think people don't think they should have to pay for content on the web, which obviously as a content producer, I have a real issue with. You know, it's like we should all just be eating air for breakfast because, you know, the content producers don't need money to live.
Yeah, no, it's true. It is. And publishing wine books in particular, well, not just wine books, but all books. You always hear people go on about writing a book and then they get it published. And it's not a big, you know, for the writers, writing isn't necessarily the way to generate the cash. Quite often you write a book and that gives you credibility that you can then leverage to generate money in other ways.
Yeah, I think for any nonfiction expert, whatever field you're in, publishing a book or ideally several books is definitely a great way of enhancing your reputation, but it's not necessarily where you will be making the most of your income from. But, you know, having a book written will more likely get you invitations to talk and to judge wines and that sort of thing. So there's definitely a credibility bonus of writing a book, even if you don't necessarily make a lot of money from it. I mean, the book industry is the same as the music industry. You know, the top 10% of all artists or authors basically make 90% of the revenue, and I'm afraid there's not a lot for. And we publish an awful lot of books in English language, so
yeah,
not necessarily on wine.
Is there other countries that have got a well-known reputation for producing wine books in their own native language? I imagine France and Italy must be.
I've worked with French, Italian publishers all across Europe, and the Chinese were quite big into publishing, although they were mostly buying English language books and translating them. Mm-hmm. The English have always led the way in wine writing, which is, you know, it's the English
language or English people?
English people. The English relationship with French wine, you know, dating back, as we know, centuries, meant that even though we weren't producing at that point any wine, we were the guys talking about it. So we were talking about writing about wine long before the French were. I don't know why, but it's the case. The Americans now, I mean, the American, you know, wine journalism and wine book market is probably one of the strongest. Karen McNeil, I can't remember, she's a fantastic author. She's published by one of the big mainstream American publishers, for instance. So, I mean, I think the Americans are definitely up there as wine experts, wine writers. The French, it doesn't get translated back into English, so I'm less familiar with it than I should be, if I'm honest.
Yeah, what about the Italians?
I don't know enough about the Italian scene. We've just had The Story of Wine republished in Italian with one of the mainstream Italian publishers. They published it again a decade or so ago. But I haven't spent enough time in Italy recently going into a bookshop and looking at the wine books. I should do that, but I'm afraid I couldn't tell you.
I couldn't read it anyway. I struggle enough with English reading. Let's talk about some of the books or the styles of books that you guys produce in a little bit more detail. One of the things I thought was quite interesting, although you said it wasn't a big part, was you bring back some of the older books that were published, and you're talking about one that was published over 100 years ago.
I mean, it's one of my favourite books on the list. I can't persuade enough people to read it. We've published it as a Penguin classic. It's $14.99 and it's called In the Vine Country. So Somerville and Ross were these very interesting, amusing, I think they were second cousins. They wrote The Diary of an Irish RM, which was quite successful at the time. And actually it was a TV series
in
the Regional Magistrate.
Oh, okay.
And it was a TV series in the 80s when I was a kid. Anyway, they were sent on a commission for a magazine article in, I think, in 1905, something like that, with a box brownie to the Medoc to to experience the harvest. And it is just a very, very funny tale. I mean, there's a certain amount of they were Irish, and they have some certain preconceptions about the French, and there was a lot of garlic being eaten, which obviously the Irish weren't eating at that point. But it's a wonderful snapshot of both what was happening at a harvest in that time, but also what a non-French person thought of it. And I would really, really recommend it. It's a very sweet story.
Okay, and a lot of your stuff you mentioned earlier, it's less about research and more about prose, and you look at sort of the way you guys position Andrew Jefford's Drinking with the Valkyries book, and it's very much about prose. I haven't read that book, but I struggle to understand it. The way you described it is just a series of articles he's written. But won't they date and become irrelevant?
Well, they will date eventually. So it's the first collection of his writing that's been put together. And the articles span from, I think the first one was either 2011 or 2012 through to 2020. But he went through and he updated absolutely every article in there that had something that was no longer up to date. Mm-hmm. But most of Andrew's writing is about opinion. So his opinion and experience. He talks about when he's gone to visit these, an extraordinary old wine-making woman on the coast in Liguria, and how, you know, the younger generations aren't living there anymore. So, you know, this is an area where what will happen to these wines, to these vines, to these vineyards. And that doesn't date. I mean, unfortunately, it only goes in one direction, but... you know, his feelings about what he experienced and his thoughts about, you know, the future. Most of Andrew's book is about his thinking, his thoughts. I mean, we could always do an update in 5 years if he says, look, I want to go through and just update anything that's factual in there that's changed. But generally our books, because they're stories, they don't date. The story of wine, for instance, Hugh wrote a new introduction to it. It was the last edition had been 20 years before, and he, as far as he was concerned, there wasn't a lot that he wanted to talk about in terms of the huge history of winemaking from the beginning of civilization. I mean, yes, there's been more commercialization in 20 years, but he didn't feel that was relevant to what the whole story was. So he comments on it, but it didn't need another whole chapter because it wasn't about bringing it right up to the modern day.
Book competitions... there's a few of them out there. I get a little bit lost about which ones are there. Do you want to just touch on that a little bit?
Of course.
And the importance for the industry for you guys,
yes.
But also what are the ones to look out for?
Well, in the UK, the André Simon is the big one. You know, it was created in André Simon's honour. He was Hugh's mentor, but he was very much the creators of wine writing back about 100 or so years ago. And they are looking for interesting, high-quality books. I would love to win it. Andrew Jeffords was shortlisted last year. Yeah. They have quite strict criteria. In all honesty, having worked in publishing for many, many years, very few awards actually make a difference to sales. I mean, in the bigger world, the Booker, there's the man Booker, that makes a big difference. But I think it adds credibility. I think it's a lovely thing for a publisher to have. And within the wine world, I think it makes a difference. The big US one is James Beard, and they have lots of categories because they're looking at restaurants and cookbooks and sommeliers and wine books. There's the Gourmand World Awards, which we've won quite a few of. The French have some. We always submit our books. I think it's nice to be acknowledged by a panel of peers, you know, mm-hmm. to say that we think you're doing a good job. I don't think it makes an enormous difference PR-wise.
Doesn't move the dial too much.
No.
Okay. One of the books you've got, you didn't actually commission or write. It was that South American
yes.
tomb that people... I haven't bought it yet. I've been meaning to get it, actually. How does that work?
So we've started distributing some other people's books because there are some fantastic books out there that have been published sometimes on a shoestring and self-published. So Amanda Barnes' South America Wine Guide is an absolutely phenomenal book. She put it together with she's not a publishing professional, she's a wine professional. She put it together with the help of a couple of other people helping her design and edit. But it is, I think it's the best book on the market if you're interested in South America. And it's both a reference book, but it's also, you know, a travelogue, and she's a great writer. Wink Lorch has got two fantastic books on Jura and the French Alps. You know, if you're interested in those particular niche wine areas and you want to find out more, these are the best books. We didn't publish them, but we helped get them out to our wine-loving audience. We've just taken on Miguel Houdin's book on Georgia, for instance. So we'll be, you know, because there's only six of us, we can't publish that many books in a year. But if I can bring in other people's books to our bookshop, then that's a win-win.
Is that why some... Because a lot of your books have a particular... looking at the cover anyway, they've got a particular look and feel to them. Are all your books in that sort of, you know, strong, almost... What is it? The binding.
Yes, the quarter binding.
Goes half... Well, not halfway, but, you know, onto the page and all that. And that sort of has this iconography for a particular... Your style I've seen in a lot of your books.
Yes.
And are the other ones... either old books that you've brought back into print, or are they
even the old books we brought back into print, we have designed with that quarter binding, and even those paperback classics we talked about, there's still an echo of that on the design, because that is, as you say, that's our look and feel. I think to begin with, when we started, there was quite a kind of clubby library, you know, leather bound sort of feel, and I've wanted in the last 2 years to really refresh and update that. So the book you're just about to hold, Jean-Michel Kahr's memoirs From Bordeaux to the Stars, for instance, has the quarter binding. But because we're talking about the fact that he sent one of his wines into space, so From Bordeaux to the Stars references to that. And the design of the cover has a galaxy in the artwork, and yep, it spreads across the quarter binding. And I think that's a bit more playful. And on Burgundy, which we publish next month, is bright green. So it's not the sort of the darker reds that we were publishing earlier on. Obviously, when we distribute other people's books, they've completely designed them. So, you know, we're taking their book because we think it's an important book, and it's a book that we should help get out there. But the look and feel, obviously, is entirely up to them.
Okay. And before we finish up, let's get a couple of recommendations from your guys' list. So what sort of categories should we be looking at? I think regional, personal, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, so we was thinking that so we do books about different regions. And I think if you want to learn more, if you're a WSET Level 3 student, for instance, or if you're just passionate about Champagne, we have a series of books which are anthologies. So they're full of the writings of just some of the best writers in the world on a particular region. So On Burgundy comes next in September. We've already done Bordeaux, Champagne and California. So I think if you're interested in particular regions, then have a look at the anthologies. For personal, I just mentioned Jean-Michel's books, but it's his story, but he was instrumental in improving the wines of Bordeaux in the last 30, 40 years. So what's interesting about it is that it's an insider story. It's a story of the industry, not just of the region and the wines. And then I think the last category that people should think about are just something that's really, really accessible, and that's Oz Clark on wine. So if you want just one book about wine, the wines of the world, and what somebody with a truly amazing palate and a wonderful communicator thinks about the wine, the regions and the grapes, Oz Clark on wine is the book you should buy. And there are laughs in it, but you'll learn a huge amount.
Okay, brilliant. All right then, Hermione, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.